You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, DJ Foster. I am joined tonight live from Staples Center with Jordan Heimer. Jordan, thanks for coming on. I gotta ask you, 115-98, Golden State dominates. Are you surprised by first the result and the manner of which we got to the result?
I'm surprised by both. But I'm surprised, frankly, more by the latter than by the former. Like, this Golden State team can kind of beat anyone by 20 on any night. But if anything, this game was worse than even the score makes it look.
Yeah.
The Clippers were down 37-19 by the end of the first quarter. The game was essentially over at that point. And not just that, you got this feeling watching this game, like, how could the Clippers ever beat this team? What mismatch could they ever find on offense that they could exploit? How can they stop these obvious mismatches that Golden State is able to exploit when the Clippers are playing defense?
Mm-hmm.
How can J.J. Redick stay in the game against Clay? How can Luke and Mbah Moute stay in the game when he's going to be given the full-on Tony Allen treatment? It was disheartening, and I think the Clippers have a lot to figure out going forward as they start to think about how they're going to try to beat this team in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think disheartening is a good word to describe it. I kind of got that feeling watching the game, too. You just felt a little helpless watching the Clippers. And when the interior passing from the Warriors started happening, where Zaza Pachulia is throwing dimes, and it's just tic-tac-toe to easy layups, and then the Clippers come back down on the other end, and they can't manufacture anything good. I want to talk to you about Blake Griffin. I think this was maybe the worst Blake Griffin game I've ever seen. And that includes rookie year and some of the sophomore stumbles. And, like, I think this is legitimately the worst I've ever seen Blake Griffin play. Am I, like, way off base in that?
So this was definitely a terrible off night for Blake. And some of those things are very uncharacteristic. For instance, 7 turnovers, 6 of which I believe were in the first quarter.
Right.
Essentially took the Clippers out of the game. But some of those things, and of course, by the way, like, here we are in the moments after this loss. I tend to kind of overblow the panic button. But I felt like some of the things you're seeing from Blake are endemic to playing this Warriors team. You know, Blake, he's listed at 6'10", but he's probably really 6'7.5 or 6'8". He's not a super long guy, considering how athletic he is. And a lot of those mistakes were being forced by the fact that when Luke was on the court, basically the Clippers were playing 5-on-4.
Yeah.
Blake is surrounded by Kevin Durant, or he's going 1-on-1 against Draymond Green, which is not a great matchup for him. He has no success bullying Draymond to the paint, and he ends up taking these very out-of-his-comfort-zone shots. You know, not just the mid-range jumper, but a step-back mid-range jumper or a mid-range jumper on the move. Things we're not used to Blake looking for, and places that aren't really his comfort zone. And I thought some of that was Blake, but some of that is that the Warriors did an incredibly effective job of really keeping all of the Clippers out of their comfort zones, keeping them from getting what they wanted to get on the offensive end.
The offense felt very plain, like very vanilla to me tonight. The Clippers would run a little pick and roll. The Warriors would switch. And Blake would have a guy like Clay or a guy like Andre Iguodala on him and was just completely unable to do anything with it. And I think if there's anything troubling about what we've seen from Blake this year, it's his inability to punish teams that are switching these guards and forwards that he should be able to back down and score on in the post. We really haven't seen low post Blake Griffin beating up guys that he should beat up this year.
Look, it's interesting you say that, because eye test, I feel the same way. When you look at the numbers, the percentage of shots Blake is taking in the paint is actually up, and the percentage of mid-range jump shots as a percentage of his total shots taken, is actually down.
Right, so, but while I would say that there needs to be a caveat with that, though, because that's not necessarily post-possessions. That's rolling, that's cutting to the basket, that's all that. I would think, and we can look this up at a later date, I would think that his post-scoring is way down.
I would think that you're right. I guess I wonder how much of that is that with when you're playing with Luke on the other corner, teams are going to play basically with the guy guarding Luke having 1 foot nearly in the paint.
Right.
So I don't think Blake's looking up and seeing a whole lot of room to attack the rim. Certainly there wasn't a lot of room tonight for anyone, it seemed. Even on fast breaks, the Warriors did such a great job in their transition D of just kind of cutting off the easy lanes to the rim and making it tough. And I'm with you that the offense looked vanilla, but I'm curious, DJ, like, if you're Doc Rivers and you're looking at this film and trying to figure out what are we going to do next time we play the Warriors, how do you get J.J. Redick open looks? How do you get space for Chris Paul? How do you find more space for Blake Griffin or more space for big-to-big passes? Because all of the things that I think of as the go-to trademarks of this Clippers offense, I felt like the Warriors took away tonight.
Yeah, they shut just about everything down. I think the more set action you can run with J.J. running off double screens and the out-of-timeout plays sort of look at it, I think you have to be even more heavily scripted against the Warriors because just the freelance stuff where you're getting one screen on ball, it's not working. I think the biggest difference we saw from the Warriors offense and the Clippers offense is that the Warriors can break you down very easily, very quickly with just some sort of simple initial action, whereas the Clippers, no one was breaking down the defense. No one was having to rotate. There was no scrambling going on the Golden State side. It was just like a simple switch, whatever it was, very, very simple action, and then the Clippers are 7 seconds, 6 seconds left on the shot clock, and someone's left to try and bail them out with a crazy shot. The quality of shots that Chris Paul took tonight were so unlike Chris Paul, but it was because no one else was able to generate any sort of offense whatsoever.
Yeah, when I say that this was worse than it looks, I mean, if you did kind of an expected value simulation for the shots that both teams took.
Oh, yeah.
I think the Warriors win this game by 30 or 40.
I would agree.
I mean, the Clippers scored 12 points off of end-of-clock three-point heaves, two by Jamal, two by Chris. You take those off the board, it's already a 30, 35-point game. Yeah, look, tell me that I'm sounding too fatalistic, DJ, because I don't want to be that guy. But with what you're talking about in terms of playmaking and breaking the defense down off the dribble, from what I was seeing in the upper press box, is a lot of this is just endemic to the talent. So what I mean by that is Blake is amazing, but he's not long. And Chris is amazing, but he's not super quick and he's not super big. And so the Warriors are able to corral these guys off of switches relatively easily. And then on the other end of the court, the Clippers can't really do that. Because as soon as you end up with, say, Blake mismatched onto KD, which in your head you're thinking, well, Blake should be able to cover KD, but it's just no contest in real life.
And then he's running around a double screen. You got Blake chasing Kevin Durant around the perimeter. Right, it just looks wrong.
Or he's taking him to the hole and just using that extra length to basically be able to lay it up off the glass without Blake really being able to make a play on that ball that bothers him all that much. Again, tell me why I'm wrong. Tell me what it is that the Clippers can do going into a next game or a seven-game series that can help ameliorate some of these mismatches.
Yeah, I don't think the glass is empty. I don't want to say like the Clippers are doomed in a matchup against Golden State because just, you know, 24 hours ago, we were talking about how well the Clippers match up with Golden State, and they're a team that defensively can give them some trouble, and I still think all of those things are true. Now, if the Clippers rotate the way they did tonight and are slow to the ball and just decide not to pinch down and help the helper and just leave DeAndre Jordan in an island, it's going to be ugly. But I think peak Clippers can give Golden State a good game. I think the one thing here, though, Chris Paul is always going to have a tough time against the Warriors. Because there's always going to be that length. There's always going to be Andre Iguodala. Sean Livingston. There's always going to be Clay. There's always going to be a big, tall, long guy who's a great individual defender who is going to make life tough for Chris Paul, right?
That's true. But actually, in some ways, what I found most disheartening was, look, the glow is off the early season start to a certain extent. And it probably was even before this game. The two losses to Indiana, the loss to Brooklyn, the loss to Detroit. But I think the Cleveland win kind of helped buoy the Clippers, or at least the story, the narrative around the Clippers felt like, okay, there were some weird losses. They blew Cleveland out. That's kind of a wash.
Yeah.
What I found most disheartening about this game was all of the elements of that fast start that we were praising so much.
Yeah.
Andrew Hahn coming on night after night and talking about Luke. J.J. Redick, after a few bad games to start the season, looking really at peak J.J. again. The Clippers weren't even able to play those guys tonight. I think Luke played 6 minutes in the first half. I think J.J. played 6 minutes in the first half. A little of that was foul trouble, but most of that was the Warriors were so easily taking advantage of kind of J.J.'s limits on defense and Luke's limits on offense that all of a sudden you see Doc adjusting things he's been doing all season 12 minutes into the game.
Right.
And that feels troubling.
Yeah,
that feels like the stuff that's working against everyone else, you're kind of admitting we're a quarter into this matchup, and that stuff's not going to work against this team.
I think you have to stick with JJ. I think he's part of the core. He's not someone that you can just decide to go away from when you play Golden State because the matchups aren't great. Unless you have plans of trading JJ or Jamal or Austin Rivers, I think it's dangerous to just simply go away from JJ. Honestly, I think if you're looking for some optimism, Blake is never going to be this bad again. And I feel pretty confident in saying that he's not going to play worse than he did tonight. 5 for 20, 7 turnovers. That is like the least Blake line ever. So if you're looking for upside, and you're looking for how the Clippers can stay in a close game with Golden State and beat them and push them in a 7-game series, it's got to be Blake. And the whole game, I was just kind of struck by that. Every time the ball got to Blake in a potential mismatch or the defense shifted a little bit, he was totally inept. He couldn't find ways to score. He couldn't, you know, his shot wasn't falling. He was making silly passes out of double teams and silly passes when he went to the rim. So if you're looking for a positive, it's that Blake is not going to be this bad again.
You're right. This is a season worst, and as you said, perhaps career worst game for Blake. But that being said, I was struck by how comfortable the Warriors were with letting Blake get the ball in the high post against Draymond Green.
Now, oh, yeah.
Clearly, the Clippers felt like that was a situation they wanted to work for in the first 6 minutes of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And Blake had that opportunity 3 or 4 times. And just, look, I'll admit it. Sometimes there's been so much noise around Draymond Green going back to last year's finals and then stuff that happened over the summer, that it's almost like it took tonight for me to remember he's amazing.
He's fantastic.
He does everything for this team.
Yep.
He hits every open three. He can switch against everybody, and he's something of a Blake stopper.
Game high plus 25 and plus minus tonight.
Which is one of those times when the eye test is already telling you what you don't even have to go to the box.
You don't, right? But yeah.
But yeah, I feel like on a very basic level, Blake needs to be able to punish Draymond Green one-on-one for the Clippers to win a series against
yeah.
the Warriors.
Yep.
As good as Draymond is, Blake's a little bigger than him, he's a little heavier than him, he's probably even a little longer than him, and he needs to figure out a way that can work. And right now, tonight, it wasn't the mid-range, it wasn't the back-to-the-basket stuff, he wasn't able to really move Draymond at all. I'm not sure which of those directions needs to get kind of more touches. But it's got to be something.
Yeah, Blake's got to win that matchup. I mean, just from, I know this isn't how basketball works, but if you want to look at position by position and each player matchup and who's guarding who, you're not going to win if Blake doesn't win his matchup against Draymond. It's not going to happen. Jamal would have to get nuclear. JJ would have to hit multiple threes. Like, that's the one advantage that the Clippers almost always have night in and night out is Blake is a total matchup nightmare. And for Golden State, it's not the case.
And also, everybody watches a lot of Golden State. But the balance on this team is really extraordinary.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the box score at the end of the first half, all four of the big four for them had at least 9 points, 4 assists, 4 rebounds. That's amazing. I mean, that's just kind of an amazing amount of balance and across-the-board talent. Boy, it's just, I'm reading my notes from the game.
Yeah.
Three times I just wrote, they can't beat this team. They can't beat this team. Allen Anderson, question mark? They can't beat this team.
Who do you help off of? You know, when the defense breaks down and you're rotating, you're going to leave Clay? Like, you're going to leave Steph? You're going to leave Kevin Durant? Like, if you...
Well, tonight they chose to leave Draymond, which obviously is who you have to leave, and he punished them.
Yeah,
right? I think he had 5 open threes, and he had 4 of them.
Yeah. It's tough. It's... These decisions that you make, you think you have to stay home, but then someone else is getting this wide open look, and it's... Look, I think what we saw tonight, too, is sort of like the actualized dream of what everyone thought the Warriors would be when Kevin Durant went there, right? Like, this was as good as I've seen Golden State play, in part because they were just completely unselfish, the ball was peppering around... And once they broke down the defense initially, once they made a few guys help, once they got into the paint, I mean, it was lights out just about every single possession.
And they're so lethal in transition.
Yeah.
I mean, the Clippers, look, obviously the turnovers don't help because it means you're having to get back in transition way more often than you'd like to, but just helpless in transition. You know, if you try to clog the paint, it's kicking out to an open three-pointer. If you try to guard the line, you're going to have somebody streaking to the rim. Boy, they just felt unstoppable.
27 fast break points for the Warriors.
Oh, that's incredible.
An offensive rating tonight of 114.9, which is crazy good.
Yeah, that was tough. Now look, Raymond Felton could be a 20-point swing. Get a little Raymond Felton in there, and a whole different ballgame.
And you know, Paul Pierce is all nice and ready to go. I got it. So
good point. He could be the answer to guarding Kevin Durant.
I've got to ask you. I was just looking on Twitter, and Bill Simmons is talking about, do the Clippers need to make a trade? They don't need JJ, Jamal, and Austin Rivers. When do they make the deal? How much of a panic should this set the Clippers in? Is this like a moment where they realize, okay, we need more? It's a personnel problem, or is this just, look, Blake had a rough night, we'll run it back the next time we see him, it's the first of 4 games, no need to panic yet?
Well, I guess one of the questions is, what's the trade?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Going into the season, I think there were a lot of people who felt like, hey, maybe bringing Jamal back was somewhat superfluous, but then you watch a game like this, and in fact, Jamal's one of the few guys able to create his own shot.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard to see the situation getting better with fewer playmakers and fewer pure shooters. If anything, this was a clogged offense. They had trouble getting space. And you want to figure out where is more spacing coming from, not how can we trade a shooter for what, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Rudy Gay is still out there. But what is it the Clippers have that the Sacramento Kings, who probably going into a full-on rebuild if they trade DeMarcus Cousins... What could the Clippers offer them?
Yeah, they don't have a draft pick to trade until 2021, which outlives the contract of course, every key member of the Clippers.
Yeah, that is problematic. I mean, of course, you're right. You can't completely panic. This team is 16-7. They have shown flashes of being truly elite. But it is going to be hard to shake this game off. I'm really interested to see how this team reacts to this. You know, like, what do the next 10 games look like? Are they super determined to buckle down and kind of get back on a winning streak and turn the page on this? Or does the memory of this game kind of linger? Does this become something that's hard to shake off until the next time they play the Warriors?
I do feel like this could be a pivotal moment in the season just for that reason. Right? This could be a moment where they can really turn it around, or it could get ugly pretty quickly. I would guess that... Look, the Clippers, if any team has experience in facing crushing losses, it's the Clippers, right?
That's true.
And bouncing back from them. I know there's a point where, like, yeah, you can only take so many of those, but this, you had a couple days rest, you're at home, national television, first matchup, regular season matchup against this team that everyone's calling a super team, and you can, you know, it's a chance to make a statement and to come out and have kind of this effort and this sort of performance all the way around. It's, like you said, it's disheartening. So it will be interesting to see how they bounce back from this.
It will. And look, I don't know how much more analysis there is. The game was so over by halftime.
Yeah.
It was hard even to keep parsing the third and fourth quarter because it felt like extended garbage time. The rotations were weird. You had people playing minutes they don't usually play. And it felt like the whole team kind of packed in at a certain point and just thought, we're going to try again next time.
I would say that the Clippers are still in prime position to contend for a title, especially, and you never know what's going to happen. It's a long season. You never know if someone gets hurt. Like, what happens if Draymond Green gets hurt? What happens if Steph or Klay or any of those guys get hurt? There's value in being near the top, right? We've seen playoff teams before that. The Houston Rockets went to a Western Conference Finals, and they were not very good. I mean, there's value absolutely in hanging around, is what I'm trying to say.
We always look at that series from the Clippers' point of view, but of course, if you look at it from the Rockets' point of view, what you see is, hey, we hung around, and we hit a team that basically, in the Clippers, had no bench, and they hit an exhaustion point, and they hit that point three quarters of the way through Game 6, and that was the end of their season. That being said, it would take one of those four guys getting injured. It just feels like those four guys out there together are unguardable, at least by a team that lacks length. And the Clippers lack length to the extent that the Warriors, I think, demand it.
They do. It's true, and it's just a lot to ask for JJ to, you know, to stop Klay Thompson on one end, and then come back and have offensive success against some of the longest, best wing defenders in basketball.
It's funny, right? Because you mentioned the Rockets. Clearly, if you were ranking players in the NBA, James Harden is a better offensive player than Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
But J.J. Redick actually does surprisingly well defending James Harden. Why? Mm-hmm. Because J.J.'s a good positional defender. He doesn't bite on the myriad of fakes that Harden usually throws out there. He's really good at staying home on him. And Harden's not that big. They're probably about the same size. JJ might even have half an inch on him. With Klay, it's the length, it's the size, it's Klay's ability to pump fake JJ once and then really bully him down to into the paint to 10 or 12 feet away, and that's like a layup for Klay Thompson.
It's a very clear physical mismatch.
Right, and there's just nothing JJ can do about it. And I think when we keep reusing the word disheartening, it's because it felt like so many of the aspects of what Warriors were doing tonight, it just felt like there's nothing the Clippers could do about it.
That's, yeah. I keep trying to think of, you know, the ways in that this gets better and the ways that you fix it, and I think a lot of it has to come from Doc. I'm not saying this loss is on Doc or he necessarily did anything wrong tonight, but I feel like coaching is a place where Steve Kerr is a great coach, but I'm saying coaching offensively maybe is a place where this thing can even out a little bit. Maybe you script it so much that, you know, you're trying to specifically get these guys in foul trouble and you're baiting Draymond to get those second fouls. And I think in part Doc tried that by going to Blake heavily at the start. But again, if Blake plays like this, just forget about it. There's no chance.
Yeah, that's true. And of course, what you're saying is right. A lot of the things that went wrong, I thought, in the scheme tonight are things that the Clippers do because it's 82 games in the regular season, and you need to have kind of a basic scheme, and then you make little adjustments off that when you can, but there's no practices. I think they've practiced twice since the beginning of the season. And so you run the stuff you run, even against teams where running that stuff really doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's part of it, is that you're just seeing the Clippers work certain things. Like, for instance, it's been nice to see the Clippers show the ability on defense this year to do a lot more switching than they usually do. And against the Warriors, I felt like they were over-switching. that some of the switches that might make sense against almost any other team with the Warriors, you end up with some crazy mismatches you want no part of. And then when they throw another pick and roll in there, or they've got guys cutting off ball into the paint, you're in big trouble against them. And maybe staying home a little bit more against the Warriors is the way to go. You know, I think you want Luke staying on Durant to a certain extent, and you want Blake staying on Draymond, and those are kind of the guys you want them guarding because they don't have another obvious matchup on defense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like the switching did land them in a little bit of hot water. You know what's really scary, Jordan?
Tell me what's scary.
That the Warriors had that 114.9 offensive rating, scored 115 points, and they shot 7 for 30 from 3.
Yeah, I know there was not a lot of silver lining to this game.
Steph went 0 for 8, and the Clippers lost by, I mean, they could have got blown out by 25, 30 points.
It would certainly be nice to see what this game looks like if the Clippers don't turn it over 10 times in the first quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty uncharacteristic. We saw it against Brooklyn, too, but obviously usually a Chris Paul team takes care of the ball. I'll give you another disheartening thing, DJ.
Okay, as if we needed some more after tonight, but yes, continue.
The crowd was one-third Warrior fans.
Was it really?
And this is just not a great crowd. I don't know if it's the Staples Center. I don't know if it's some of the in-game game operations they do for the Clippers, which I've always thought are pretty shabby. But the loudest the crowd was all night was when they got free Chick-fil-A because Kevon Looney missed 2 free throws in the fourth quarter. Literally the loudest cheer of the night.
That was bad. I know. I heard it on TV, and I knew immediately it had to be some sort of promotion. And you
it's
could,
like, first of all, I hate that promotion.
That's terrible. It has nothing to do with the game, and it's just, you end up with a silly situation like this where the players are pissed, looking around, wondering why the crowd's going crazy when they're down 20 in a fourth quarter garbage time. Ugh.
I was thinking that exact thing. Like, what does it feel like to be sitting there with a towel on your head on the bench, and you haven't heard the crowd kind of get behind you all night, and now everyone gets 2 pieces of Chick-fil-A. People are going nuts.
It's rough.
But this probably isn't the night for me to do my 10-minute rant on in-game ops here at the Staples Center for Clipper Games.
The heck it isn't.
I wish I could just have one night to talk to the person who's in charge of what goes on during commercial breaks. There's so many things lacking in the in-game ops.
Yeah, I feel like we will save it for another day, for sure, though.
Save for another day, but just remind me to talk about Kiss Cam, Celebrity Lookalike Cam, the Thunder Sticks, the Miss It for Chicken. It's just bad from the top down.
Can we talk about Kiss Cam and how that's still a thing?
Yeah, let's talk about that for
a second. Let's do it.
Here we are in 2016. We're all supposed to be hyper-literate and hyper-aware now in how easy it is to be predatory and creepy and preemptory and assumptive when it comes to sexual behavior. But to have a camera that shows 2 people on it who clearly are either platonic friends or sometimes strangers, right? The camera will actually mess up, and it will frame 2 people who, if you look to their left and their right, that's who they're actually with. So you frame 2 strangers, and the kiss cam's on them, and the person who's the voice of the kiss cam will be saying, just the cheek, just the hand. That's weird, man.
It's very
weird.
You're
telling 2 strangers to kiss each other, and you're kind of bullying them into it, and they don't want to because, you know, they're strangers, and strangers don't have to touch each other if they don't want to. How is this still a thing in 2016?
I don't know if they do this anymore, and I hope not, but in the years where I would go to Clippers games, a lot of times the running gag of Kiss Cam would be they would put 2 men on the screen, and the whole crowd would have a laugh because it's so ridiculous that 2 men would kiss each other.
Right, who could possibly imagine?
Oh my gosh, and that was the big gotcha moment of Kiss Cam.
They've got another new, I don't know what you want to call it, element with the bully camera this year, which is Celebrity Lookalike Cam, which again is like, I can't believe I'm like this grandpa with the hot take, but people pay good money to go to sports games. I know that's usually the beginning of like, that's why I'm allowed to boo or some stupid crap like that. But if I'm a grandma and I just paid a lot of money to sit in the first section of Staples Center, do I really want to be shown side by side with 94-year-old Queen Elizabeth II?
Not ideal. No.
That's like some super offensive stuff. Same thing with, if I happen to be an African-American gentleman wearing a Kangol, does that mean I look like Samuel L. Jackson? I'm not sure it does.
Or just that I enjoy Kangol.
I'm not sure I blame that gentleman for seeming pretty unamused by the celebrity lookalike camera that he was shown on. I just think they've got to really maybe take a minute to look at some of these features and like analyze if they could do better.
I agree with you completely. Luckily, the Clippers have time between now and their next game, Saturday night against the Pelicans at home. They get a nice little break. This has been a long stretch. Can we blame any of this loss to fatigue even after the two-game rest just because this past month has been so crazy?
Yeah, look, I mean, maybe. But, again, I can't believe I'm this hot take guy. I'm like the ex-NBA player who's bringing out pacifiers to talk about these newfangled NBA players. But, like, look, man, like, everyone's tired. It's a long stretch for a lot of teams. Yes, the Clippers have played a couple more games than some teams, but you're at home. You're playing your number one rival for the Western Conference title. That's a game you should be able to get up for.
And it just didn't seem like there were some effort issues tonight. Let's not. I know that's like a thing that a lot of sports writers can. They never want to go to, and you never talk about somebody's effort and it not being there. Screw that, man. The effort was not good tonight. As a whole, the bench gave them a little something for a while there. The starters, though, defensively, lazy. Lazy defensive rotations.
Look, it's like you said. This isn't high school basketball. Helping the helper is, like, that's basic. It's fundamental, and it's something we've talked about the Clippers being better at this year. So, to see how easily kind of that third guy in the play was able to just cut off ball and streak down the lane for these easy kind of backdoor passes for the Warriors was strange. It was
hands in pockets, not contesting passing lanes, just standing around.
And contrasted with, I don't have the number in front of me of the, what do they call them, deflections that the Warriors had versus the Clippers.
Yeah.
But it seemed like every pass that the Clippers tried to throw, even the ones that got through, were getting deflected, touched, tipped, altered, messed with. And you just felt none of that with the Clipper defense. The Warriors got whatever they wanted to get, and they got it pretty easily.
Disheartening.
Disheartening.
Word of the show. Jordan, anything else you want to add before we go? Any other grandpa-ish-y hot takes you got?
Oh, I think I've been grandpa enough. I'm not usually this misanthropic. Oh, I do have one more.
Yeah.
I have one more if we're talking about game ops.
Yeah.
When something is being replayed, whether it's a potential flagrant foul or an exciting play that could go either way, what they show on the Jumbotron is a live feed of the people watching the replay in Secaucus.
Wait,
so
really?
So you can see the backs of the heads of the Secaucus-based referees very clearly.
But not the actual play?
What you can't see is the actual play that's being replayed at all.
Come on! That's terrible.
Like, someone should have figured that out 20 games into the season. I thought maybe the first couple games they were just playing with this, but this I'm now realizing is every replay, they go to the live feed of the replays in Secaucus.
I'm going
to
write a strongly worded letter.
Hopefully someone in the Clippers brass listens to every episode of Locked on Clippers. These things will all be changed by next time.
That seems highly unlikely.
It seems highly unlikely, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get a gig from, you know, the big TV exec that's listening. We already established that a few episodes ago, so.
So no one's contacted you about that yet?
I keep checking my email, and it could just be like a spam folder situation.
Check your spam.
Okay, I will. I'll get back to you on that. Jordan, thanks for joining us, as always.
DJ, my pleasure.
We will be back on. Let's see, we'll be back tomorrow, because this is a daily podcast. I'm gonna do one tomorrow. So thanks for listening to the Locked On Clippers podcast. For Jordan Heimer, I'm DJ Foster. Enjoy your night.